Well, as you can see, the title changed a little bit. I decided it needed to be shorter. So we're going to talk about biotechnology in Cuba, and I've subtitled this State-of-the-Art Science in a Developing Middle-Income Country, because it's important to understand the context within which these remarkable developments are taking place. So here's a summary of Cuba's health outcomes. I won't be going through this. Dabney has already talked about this. And it's important to note that in virtually every critical area of public health and medicine, that Cuba has achieved incredible successes. A high-quality primary care network, an unequaled public health system, educating a skilled workforce, controlling infectious diseases, achieving a decline in non-communicable diseases, for example, the decline in diabetes rates. And beyond that, even meeting the emergency health needs of less developed countries, case in point being the recent Ebola epidemic in West Africa. But perhaps as notable as all the rest, and certainly more surprising, is that Cuba has created and sustained a national biomedical research infrastructure, something that you would never expect to see in a poor country, in a relatively poor country. Cuba's biotechnology industry is a significant economic force in Cuba. Cuba invested at least $1 billion between the mid-1980s and mid-2000s. It's difficult to comb through the data and disaggregate what went where, but that's one of the estimates that is often used. By 2005, the earnings coming into the country were $300 million per annum. Between 2009 and 2013, it went up to $2.5 billion over that five-year period, or $500 million per year. And now, between 2013 and 2017, the industry is projected to earn $5 billion, projected at about $1 billion per annum. So you can see that this is a fairly impressive rate of return on that investment, just looking at it from an economic perspective. What about production? Well, Cuba has more than 1,200 international patents. Many of its products are actually patented in the U.S. and, of course, internationally. Over two-thirds of generic drugs that are available for domestic use are actually produced in Cuba. At one time, that was 583 out of 881 items in the pharmacopoeia. Cuban biopharma products are sold in over 50 countries. None of them are sold in the U.S. No Cuban, and 91 new products are currently undergoing clinical trials, 60 clinical trials worldwide. No Cuban product has ever been clinically tested in the U.S. There may be finally an exception, which I will talk about later. And of course, none of these drugs are available here. So let's look at the industry. I want to talk a little bit about how the Cuban model works. We talked before about the Cuban model in public health and integration of public health and medicine. Here we'll look at the Cuban model for developing a biotechnology industry. One of the first features is integration and cooperation among institutions. So what the Cubans did was to establish what they call a scientific pole, a cluster of scientific research institutions in one area. The first one was the Center for Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology in 1986, known as CIGB. Then very quickly, 10 more centers were built, research centers, in addition to over 50 research and production institutions, because this is not only a research enterprise, it's also a production enterprise. So hundreds of researchers were also trained worldwide, and I'll talk a little bit later about a flu vaccine, but it was as one example, it was the result of collaboration between five of these institutions. So this is horizontal integration. Then you have this closed loop approach. What this means is coordination of the entire process among institutions, from research to marketing, of any biotechnological product. So this is a case of vertical integration. Every phase of the research and development process, the clinical trials, and then eventually the marketing of the product or the export of the product is all thought out and is all part of a vertically integrated process. This is also very different from the way pharmaceutical industries work in most other countries. And then joint ventures. These began with Canada and the UK, led very quickly to licensing of products and joint projects worldwide in many, many countries. Cuba now, for example, has three joint ventures in China that are based on Cuban technology. We'll also talk about the rationale for the Cuban model, and there are three basic points I want to make. The first is that the Cuban model puts puts quality of life over profits. It's one of the most advanced biotechnological industries. It matches up with Brazil and India, for example, in the developing world, both of which are recognized as powerhouses in the production of generics in particular. But the focus in Cuba is on quality of life gains versus maximizing revenues. For example, the cancer vaccines that I'll talk about later that Cuba has been developing are designed to alleviate pain and suffering and improve the quality of life of the patient rather than cancer research based on finding the cure. It's about immediate results, immediate impact in treatment and quality of life. Then the other main part of the Cuban model is the prioritization of the greatest need. It's a needs-driven approach. So Cuba prioritizes the development of affordable vaccines for diseases like typhoid and cholera, affecting poor populations worldwide, while globally, 90% of research and development goes to diseases affecting the 10% of the population who can pay. And then third, enhancing access to treatment. And one of the ways in which Cuba does this, in addition to universal access within its own borders, Cuba produces generics and sells them to less developed countries at a fraction of the price offered by other sellers, mainly transnational corporations. So what kinds of products is Cuban biotech known for? Well, one of the cornerstones of the industry was innovative vaccines, and Cuba's biotech industry was initially very vaccine-focused. So the first product of note was a recombinant hepatitis B vaccine. By 2001, this had received pre-qualification from the World Health Organization and is now used in more than 30 countries. This is a very effective preventive against hepatitis B infections. Then you find the first meningitis B vaccine. This vaccine is used all over Latin America and in other countries as well. GlaxoSmithKline made an agreement with the Finley Institute, which is part of this biotech poll, to test it in Europe. And then finally, the world's first synthetic antigen flu vaccine. This is the one I was talking about before that involved five of the Cuban agencies, production and research agencies. This is called Haemophilus influenza type B, a very long name, and it was developed using a synthetic carbohydrate, and this was really the first vaccine of its kind developed in the world. So here's an article from November 18th, 2013, called Embargo Blocks Import of Life-Saving Drugs from Cuba. Princeton University confronts meningitis epidemic preventable in Cuba. So you may remember that the first cases were in Princeton and then at University of California in Santa Barbara, a major outbreak of meningitis B of type B, which is potentially fatal disease, and there actually were some deaths among the student population at Princeton. The majority of the vaccines that are available do not work against this particular strain of meningitis. Cuba, because it confronted an epidemic in the 1970s, as a response began to develop the vaccine at the Finley Institute. It's called VA Mengo BC. The names are very difficult to parse in Cuban biotech. Sorry about that. They carried out trials and readied the vaccine by 1991. It's interesting to note that Cuba has offered this vaccine to the U.S. In at least two other outbreaks. The previous one before the outbreak at Princeton was an outbreak of meningitis B in Oregon. So what was the response to Cuba's latest offer to send the vaccine, which it did offer to again when this story broke in the news? Instead, the Food and Drug Administration authorized the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to import Bexsero type B vaccine developed by Switzerland's Novartis Corporation. This is a vaccine, and this was used to incorporate, vaccinate 8,000 Princeton students. Bexsero is new, has not undergone clinical trials in the United States, although it has now been cleared for use in the European Union and Australia. And needless to say, this was imported at great cost when an effective and free vaccine was available 90 miles away. Therapeutic cancer vaccines. So a lot of the focus of Cuban biotech continues to be on vaccines. These are vaccines of a very new type, not what we traditionally think of as vaccines. Cancer is the second cause of death in Cuba, as you've seen, after cardiovascular causes. And as a consequence of this mortality and morbidity rate from cancer, Cuba developed a national cancer plan. It's based on universal access to at all levels of service, to all levels of service, and this includes prevention, diagnosis, treatment, and palliative care. So once again, you know, an integrated approach to dealing with a public health problem. And then they also began to look at what biotech could develop to help in the treatment and control of cancer. The first drug here, another interesting name, nemutuzumab, is, let's call it NEMO for short, is for the treatment of advanced tumors, especially in the head, neck, and brain. It's what's called a monoclonal antibody, please don't ask me what that is, that mimics human immune cells. And the way it mimics immune cells is by targeting a protein that causes uncontrolled cell division and growth. So, typically the way we understand vaccines is that you get a tiny dose of smallpox, and this stimulates the development of antibodies due to the exposure to the pathogen. In this case, these are treatments that function as vaccines, but they're therapeutic vaccines. They deal with a disease in progress, and what they do is interfere. They vaccinate you against some key mechanism that allows the progression of the disease to continue. So, therapeutic vaccines. Simovax EGF is another drug that was developed in 2008. It's a vaccine for the therapeutic treatment of advanced lung cancer. So, another article. USA about to get Cuba's lung cancer vaccine. And what this is about is, you may recall that recently Governor Cuomo of New York led a delegation to Cuba. Part of that delegation was the Buffalo-based Roswell Park Cancer Institute. And while they were there, they made a deal with Havana Center of Molecular Immunology to develop a vaccine in the U.S. based on Cuba's research. And this would allow clinical trials involving Simovax to begin in the U.S. as the article says, it was 25 years in the making and has been available free to Cuban patients since 2011. How does Simovax work? Well, similar to other formula that I described, it directs the immune system's defenses to target a protein that our own bodies produce called epidermal growth factor, which cancer cells attract and use to multiply. So, you know, an active disease mechanism. They found a way to interfere with that process. Blocking the epidermal growth factor from reaching the cancerous cells doesn't kill the cancer, but does stop it from growing and spreading. Epidermal growth factor also plays an important role in many other cancers, like prostate, breast, colon, and pancreatic cancer. And all these things are potential targets for this vaccine, and this could be a major breakthrough. Cuba, so far, given limited resources, has only been able to carry out clinical trials and use Simovax on lung cancer. What Roswell Park would like to do is start to explore other avenues of treatment to see if this might be effective against other forms of cancer. So does this mean, as the article seems to suggest, that Americans will soon have access to Simovax for treatment? Depends what you mean by soon. As the article says, there are going to be clinical trials, yes. And so here we have an exception. Finally, there will be clinical trials in the U.S. of a Cuban drug. But those of you who understand this process, which I take it would be most of the people in this audience, these are early phase trials, phase one and two. This is a research agreement. It's not a license, as required by the Treasury Department to bring Cuban products into the United States. So Roswell Park can use it in their own facility and on their own patients. So this is they're going to carry out these clinical trials with a very small patient population. So what would be required to make this drug available? You would need FDA-approved clinical trials, phase three trials, which cost tens of millions of dollars and require a special license from OFAC, the Office of Foreign Assets Control, in the Treasury Department. And this brings us to Heverprot, another wonderful name. I won't talk too much about Heverprot because Dr. Maas will dedicate his entire presentation to Heverprot. I just want to point out that Cuba has won awards for this treatment, the World Intellectual Property Organization Award for Best Young Inventor, a gold medal at the International Inventions Fair earlier this month from the time this article was written. It describes a little bit how it works, and one of the things that's interesting to note is that it really is used in 26 countries. I can go through the list: Cuba, Argentina, Colombia, Costa Rica, Ecuador, well, most in Latin America, but also countries as far afield as Russia, Turkey, Kuwait, and Vietnam, and the Philippines. Phase three trials are in the European Union in over 100 hospitals. China is doing advanced stage three testing as well. But in the U.S., in 2010, OFAC denied any license for Heverprot. In 2014, it did license clinical trials only, but it refused to greenlight future sales. This is important because as I pointed out, these trials cost tens of millions of dollars. This is not, you may have noticed, a socialist system. So in order for something like this to be produced, there has to be some pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. There have to be profits for the enterprise engaging in the research. Without that critical license, the marketing piece of the license, you can approve the clinical trials, they will not happen. You know, somebody has to foot the bill, and if somebody foots the bill, somebody somewhere down the road has to make some money. So Heliance, which is the U.S. subsidiary of a French company, backed out. They had no incentive to invest the millions needed for the trials. I think it was the estimate was $50 million for the Heverprot trials. And this decision, interestingly, was made even after a letter was signed by 111 members of Congress to urge the approval of the dual license. There was a reapplication in 2015, which I'm not at liberty to say very much about, other than the fact that once again the dual license was denied. The letter signed by 111 members of Congress is actually what led Medic to decide to organize a joint congressional and health expert diabetes delegation to Cuba. And at this point, I will turn it over to Dr. Musse.